2 Kings chapter 5, verses 9 through 11. Then Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean." But Naaman became furious and went away and said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy."
This morning I'd like us to continue what we started 2 weeks ago in talking about anger, and more specifically, how that we can help ourselves to rid ourselves of an anger problem that we sometimes have. You know, I know that sometimes anger is justified. We saw that even sometimes our Lord Jesus became angry. I know that sometimes anger can be purposeful, it can be useful, and it can even be godly. But unjustified anger, as we saw last time as we were studying 2 weeks ago, unjustified anger is very, very hurtful in so many different situations in our lives. It's hurtful in our relationships with our friends, with our family, with our wives and husbands. It is hurtful in our jobs. I've known of people who, because of their temper, have lost their jobs. They've not been able to hold to careers. It is harmful to our health. We talked about how that anger, if it is unresolved in our lives and it is allowed to affect us in a long-term basis, it can actually be a leading contributor to heart attack and stroke. But maybe most importantly, unresolved anger can also affect our salvation. So what I'd like us to talk about this morning is more of how that we can rid ourselves of this potential problem, which is anger. Last week, we looked at some maybe short-term things that we can do immediately when we feel ourselves losing control and anger. We looked at some things we can do very quickly to calm ourselves. This morning, what I'd like us to look at is a more long-term solution. Now, we are just touching the hem of the garment. This is not going to be an exhaustive study about everything that we can do, but I hope that what is shared this morning will be helpful to you if you indeed have a struggle with anger or know someone who does. And if we have time this morning, a second thing I'd like us to accomplish is to actually talk about what we can do to help others. I don't know about you, but sometimes if I'm around somebody who has a problem with anger, I'm around somebody who has an eruption of anger, and especially if it's in a public place, I find myself just scratching my head, not knowing what to do. I look at the person, I look at the situation, and first of all, I feel embarrassed if I'm actually with that person. And I start to think to myself, I just wish I could just cower down in a corner and hide and not be here, because I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do to calm this person's anger. But as we saw last week or last time, that's not what we should do. Hiding, ignoring the problem, saying, "Well, you know, that's just that person. That's the way he is. Or that's just the way she is. That's just the way they're going to be. We can't do anything about it." That's not the right kind of attitude. Allowing it to continue for many, many reasons is something that we cannot allow. We should do something about our own anger first and foremost, but if we have a loved one who suffers with anger, we need to do something to help them. So this morning, if we have time, I'd like us to talk about some ways that we can help people. I understand that helping people who suffer with anger or have a problem with anger is sometimes going to be a very person-specific thing. Sometimes it is a very situation-specific thing. In other words, different situations and different people require a very different approach of how we talk to that person and how we talk them down out of their anger. And the only way in some of those situations that we're going to be able to help people with anger is if we know them, we understand them, we are in their lives, and we are part of their lives. But of course, that's who we're supposed to be as Christians anyway. We are supposed to be in each other's lives. We are supposed to be working with each other and know each other's weaknesses. We know from James chapter 5, verse number 16, that we are to confess our faults one to another and pray for one another that we may be healed. We are to know what each other struggle with, and we are to walk through this life with each other. That's what Hebrews 3:13 says. It says that we are to call each other to our sides and walk through our struggles together. It says, exhort one another daily while it is called today. That is what we are to do. And if we are a Christian family together as we ought to be, we will know each other's struggles and we will help each other through that. So yes, while sometimes helping people with their anger will be situation specific, it will be person specific. But there are other times and other situations and other things that we can do that will help in every situation. And I hope we'll be able to talk about that this morning. But as we saw from our scripture reading, we're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 5. And we know this story very well, so we're not going to spend a lot of time going over the details of what happened here. We know the events of this historical situation very well, because this is about Naaman the leper and his being cured of leprosy through the power of God as enacted through Elisha the prophet. But I would like us to begin in verse number 1 of 2 Kings chapter number 5. And I want us to see what this passage teaches us about helping others with anger and also helping ourselves with anger. It says in 2 Kings 5, starting in verse number 1, Naaman, commander of the army of king of Syria, was a great man with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, had carried off a little girl from the land of Israel, and she worked in the service of Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord, "Thus and so spoke the girl from the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you Naaman, my servant, that you may cure him of his leprosy." Now, as we read, if you look at verse number 7, we see the king of Israel's reaction to this. And you know, in some ways, you can't blame the guy. Because here he is. He is a king whose kingdom has been conquered by the Syrians. And here they are, the king of Syria, writing him a letter saying, "Here's one of your conquering commanders. He's a leper. Heal him." I imagine for a moment he's very afraid at this. Some say he might have been angry at this, because in his mind, all he can think of from verse number 7 is, "Oh no, he's sending this guy to me with an impossible task. He knows I'm going to fail. All he's trying to do is pick a fight." He becomes very scared at this letter that he reads from the king of Syria. But you know, he's forgetting something. Of course, he's forgetting about God. He's only thinking about himself and what he can do. He forgot about what God could do. But thankfully, there's a man by the name of Elisha in verse number 8 that comes onto the scene, and he sends a message with a rebuke, I might add, to the king of Israel and says, "Send him to me. Send this man Naaman to me." And he says, "I will show that there is a prophet in Israel." And you know, in today's language, in English, it almost sounds like he's being a little bit full of himself, saying, "I'll show you what I can do." He's not saying what he can do. He says, "I'm a prophet. I'm a spokesman for God. God works through me, and I'm not going to show what I can do. I'm going to show you what God can do." He's not being full of himself. He is being filled with God. He says, "I will show you what God can do." So Naaman goes to Elisha in verse number 9. But let's pick up reading in verse number 10. "And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, 'Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean.' But Naaman was angry and went away, saying, 'Behold, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper.'" He talked about himself in the third person sometimes. "Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and he went away. Notice the last word. He went away in a rage. I think he's a little bit angry. And you know, reading through this and seeing what happened with Naaman and seeing who Naaman was, it's very easy to see why Naaman was so angry. It's very easy to see why that Naaman was so enraged by what was going on here. And no, it was not what Elisha said. It was not Elisha's instructions, but in fact, we see from this passage, it was actually the attitude of Naaman that caused him to be angry. Because after he's told to go and dip himself in the River Jordan 7 times, notice the first words that he says in verse number 11. Notice the first words. He says, "Behold, I thought." You see, before Naaman got there, before Naaman even arrived at the house of Elisha the prophet, before he even got in that place, he already had his mind made up. He already knew exactly what was going to happen. He already knew exactly how the whole thing was going to transpire. He knew that Elisha would come out of the house, that he would place his hand on him. There would be some sort of elaborate ceremony, and boom, he would just be cured of his leprosy. And when that didn't happen, when the reality of the situation did not match his expectations, he was disappointed. He was unwilling to listen, and he became very, very angry. Now, let's just stop there for a moment. Naaman becomes angry because the reality and his expectations for the future did not match up together. Isn't that how we get ourselves in trouble today? Isn't that how we find ourselves becoming disappointed and, yea, even sometimes angry? Because we have our own, in our own mind, how we think things ought to be, how we think the future is going to turn out. And when it doesn't happen that way, sometimes we find ourselves in Naaman's shoes, disappointed, and again, sometimes even angry. You know, it's been said many, many times that the one thing that we can count on in life is that you can't count on anything, right? Because things are always changing. Plans are always having to be remade, and things are always getting in our way. You know, sometimes, maybe a lot of times, I feel very, very sorry for my wife. I didn't tell her I was going to tell this, so sorry. And you might feel sorry for her, too. And I'm not saying just because she's married for me, although that might be a very good reason for be sorry for her. But I feel very sorry for her sometimes because when she and I got married 18 and a half years ago, I was in college finishing up a business degree, and I was a manager for a successful company. I had a good job. I had a second good job also. I was working for the dean of the College of Business that I was going to school at. I had two job offers. One was from a company in San Antonio, a very large company that was very successful. I did not seek that job offer. I had another job offer that I also did not seek from a nationwide company that I also did not seek that job offer. I mean, everything was going well, right? It was wonderful. I was going to have this degree. I was going to have this wonderful job. And Kathy was going to have a husband who was going to be a business leader of the future, right? Well, Scott, what happened? Look at you now. Well, one day I went home to her and said, well, honey, I think I'm going to quit my job and go to preaching school. Yeah, that's right. Laugh. I said, you know, I know that preachers are most of the time underpaid. I know that there is no retirement for preachers. They just die. I know that there's no health care coverage. And I know I'll most likely be fired every couple of years and will be endlessly moving everywhere from place to place. But it's all going to be okay, I promise. It really didn't go down that way. It's not exactly how it happened. I'm exaggerating the situation. But my point is this. Things are not today the way that we had originally planned. We didn't plan to be in the situation that we are in today. We definitely did not plan for the 10 years that I spent in the St. Louis area and the way things turned out there. They didn't go well. We definitely didn't plan for that. But I think if I were to ask every single one of you here today, if you were to look at your personal situation, if you were to look at your life and say, well, 20 years ago, what did I think was going to happen? And then you look back at reality over those last 20 years, would they match up? Of course not. Our reality doesn't always match up with our ideals. Our plans for the future don't always happen. The things that we want out of life aren't always realized. And, you know, we could become angry. We could become just like Naaman and say, you know, this is not what I wanted. This is not how I wanted things to happen. This is not the way I envisioned my life going. This is not how I wanted to be cured of my problems. We could become angry like Naaman. But really, that doesn't do any good, does it? You see, when we make plans for the future, when we have ideas in our mind about what the future is going to be, we cannot be like Naaman and let a change of plans result in a change of our countenance. We cannot let the disappointments and losses of life shake our faith or excuse bad behavior. And part of how that we do that, part of how that we just go with the flow and allow the changes of life to go as they are, and we don't allow them to change our faith and make us angry, is that we've got to be less focused on ourselves. We've got to be less focused on what we think, how we feel, and what we want, because that's what Naaman's problem was here. All he was focused on was what he thought, how he felt, and what he wanted. And when it didn't go that way, he was very angry. Look again at verse number 11.
You see, Naaman was looking for a spectacle. He was looking for something that would bring glory to him. He said, "Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me." You know, I can only imagine that when Elisha didn't come out of the house and he sends his servant out to give Naaman the message about dipping in the river, I can only imagine this only added insult to injury in the mind of Naaman, how that he had this lowly servant come out and tell him what to do. I wonder if there's a reason for that. I wonder if God saw the wisdom in that. I bet you he did. But you know, if Naaman had just stopped for just 1 second, if he would have just stopped for 1 second and put away his pride, he already, at this point, could have been in the water and being healed by the power of God from his leprosy. It was only his foolish pride that caused him to not have that healing. And he walked away from it. And really, I believe that teaches us two things. Two things about how to get rid of inappropriate anger. Number one, we've got to focus on other people. In order to be able to get rid of anger, if we find ourselves having a problem with anger in our lives, we got to focus on other people and not just ourselves. Because if Naaman could have seen past the end of his own nose, he would already been healed by this point. And I really think it's interesting how that seemingly so often our own ego can actually be the source of our anger. And I know this is an unrelated situation and it has nothing to do with anger, but I submit to you a scenario. Let me ask you this. If you were to go to visit someone in the hospital today, or maybe go to a nursing home or other kind of care facility, or if you were to go to someone's home, the home of a shut-in, and visit somebody who had not been out of that room for some time, what would you talk about with that person? Well, first, you might go in and talk to them about how they're doing. You might ask them about their health. You might ask them about what's going on with them. And if they're about to get out of the hospital, you might ask them when they're going to be discharged. That's normal. We do that. But what would you spend the bulk of your time talking about? Where would you spend the bulk of your conversational time with that person speaking of? You would speak about anything and everything but their health, right? You would talk about anything and everything but that hospital room. You would talk about anything and everything but the terrible food they're having to subject themselves there at that hospital. You would talk about what's going on outside. You would talk about the beauty of the earth that surrounds us. You would talk about the bluebonnets that are in bloom right now. You would talk about everything outside of that room because they want to know about what's happening outside that they cannot see because they're stuck in that room. They're sad that they're sick. They're sad that they're injured. They're sad that they can't get out. And you want to give them some hope of what's outside in the world around them. And maybe, just maybe, by not just focusing on their sickness, by not just focusing on their current situation in that room, you can give them a moment's joy by telling them about things that are going on outside. Maybe for a little while it'll help them to feel better. And you know, that's what we do when we visit people like that. And you know, the same reason that we do that for them applies to why we should do the same for ourselves. If we just focus on ourselves, if we just focus on how we feel and what we want to do for ourselves, it's only going to cause us misery. It will only cause us anger when we are not able to accomplish those goals. But if we focus on other people and we make it our joy on how to help those other people reach their goals and make it our joy for what we can do for them, then maybe, just maybe, we can help ourselves in the process. Now, Scott, are you standing there and saying that all people who have anger problems are conceited and self-centered? Because if you are, I'm going to be very angry about that. No, I'm not saying that, actually. You don't have to be self-centered to struggle with anger. But if we are self-centered and not Christ-centered, we will be more apt to struggle with it. And what I am saying is that when we find ourselves getting angry about the different things that happen to us, whether it's at school or at work or at home, if we start thinking about other people and we focus our time, our efforts, and our energy more on other people, we'll find ourselves worrying and getting angry less and less at our own issues. And maybe just as a side note, if we value other people and we place their issues ahead of our own, maybe they'll want to help us with our issues. And I think that's what the Bible says to do anyway. Remember Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse number 5? Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who thought it not robbery to be equal with God. But as he goes on to say, Paul goes on to say how that Jesus emptied himself of everything that he was, everything that was due him, everything that he had. He came to this earth, he became the servant among men, and that he died the death on the cross. Why? Not because he was thinking of himself, but because he was thinking of us. That's what the Hebrew writer said in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, where the Hebrew writer said that Jesus even went to the cross with joy. Why? Because he knew the salvation that it would bring to us. Going back to Philippians 2, starting in verse number 3, Paul again says that this is the attitude that we should have. He said, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others as more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not to his own interest, but also to the interests of others. You know, I know that Paul wasn't talking about anger specifically in that context, but I think that we'll all agree if we embody those principles, that we will certainly not allow the little things in this life to bring us to anger. We need to focus on others. But the second thing that we learn from Naaman here is not only do we need to focus on others to overcome our anger, but we also need to focus on God. We need to focus on heaven. Now, Scott, isn't that basically the solution for all problems? Well, nod your head. Yes, this it is. But if we focus on God, if we focus on heaven, what's going to happen to our anger? If we're focused on the fact, like we just said, that this world is not our home, we're just passing through, we're not going to become angry when we don't get our way. We're not going to become angry with the problems of this life because we're going to realize that those pale in comparison to the glory of heaven, Romans 8:18. We're not going to become angry when other things that happen to us around us are evil because we will have a joy that no man can take away, John 16:22. And we will have a peace that passes all understanding, Philippians 4 and verse number 7. So really, if we're focused on God and we're focused on heaven, we will always get our way. Because we will always get what we want, because no one can take away our salvation. What about what Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse number 3? He tells us that God has, according to his great mercy, caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, which is kept or reserved for you, who by God's power are being guarded through faith for salvation. He said that God and his power are guarding salvation for you. God and his power have made the reservation for you in heaven. Don't you think that we can be pretty happy about that no matter what happens to us in this life? You see, Peter's trying to get us to see the big picture. Peter in that verse is trying to get us to see the big picture, the eternal picture of life. I'm sure that all of us here this morning of understanding age, we've all put a puzzle together, right? You've all put a puzzle together, and you know, let's just say for a moment that you're putting together one of those really big ones, right, with 1,000 or so pieces. Now, if you get that puzzle out and you spread all the pieces out on the table in front of you, what do you do first? After you've got all those thousands of pieces of that puzzle spread out on the table in front of you, do you just pick one piece at random and just say, okay, this is my puzzle piece, now let me find the next one? Nope, that doesn't fit. Nope, that doesn't fit. Nope, that doesn't fit. You don't do that, do you? Because if you do that, I mean, it's going to take forever to finish that puzzle. I mean, if you don't quit in the process, but it's going to take forever to finish that puzzle piece by piece like that. But of course, what do you do first when you're putting that puzzle together is you look at the big picture. You look at the picture on the outside of that box. You look at that picture so you can see what you're trying to build. And you start with the easiest pieces. Most likely that's going to be the pieces around the rim, those pieces with a flat side. And then you slowly piece it together based on the picture. And sure, you run into problems here and there as you're building that puzzle. But you know that as you're building that puzzle, because you have all the pieces and because you have the big picture, you know that if you stick to it, you will always be able to finish it. I think that's a good metaphor for life. You know, I know Forrest Gump said that life is like a box of chocolates. No, it's not. It's like a box of a puzzle. We've got the big picture of what we want life to look like right here in our hands. We call it the Bible. It tells us of what life can look like here on this earth, and even more importantly, it tells us about what heaven is going to be like. It gives us the big picture. And all that we can do now is put together what we can. Yes, we can run into some problems sometime, but we remember in the end that all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to His purpose. Romans 8:28. We need to see the big picture. So we need to focus on others. Focus on God in heaven. Not the source of our anger, but on the source of the solutions. That's how we can help ourselves. But let's look back to this passage here in 2 Kings chapter 5. How can we help others? Well, let's go back to verse number 13. This is where Naaman's servants start to speak to him. Remember, Naaman, he's just left in a rage. He's very, very angry because things didn't turn out the way that he wanted them to turn out. And Naaman's servants stop him. And we know that this calms Naaman's anger. We know that this eventually turned Naaman around because he does go back and he dips in the river seven times and he is healed. But what was it? What was it about the words of his servant that turned him around? What was it about their words that made a difference? Well, look at verse 13. After he's left in a rage, it says, "But his servants came near and spoke to him. My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean?" You know, his servants are the voice of reason in this case. You know, they realize that his anger was absolutely pointless. And in verse number 14, he does go and obey the word of God through the prophet. But there's a couple things I want us to notice here. There's two things that I want us to notice about the way these servants talk to this man that helps him calm his anger. And I submit to you, we can also help each other to calm our anger if we do these two things. Number one, notice how they're very calm with him themselves. Notice how they are calm and they spoke calmly. One might even imagine that they spoke very softly with him. They said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it?" They're very reasonable and they're very soft-spoken with him. You know, we've all met people that have flown off the handle and started just getting loud and started yelling and just we're not really sure what to do with them. What happens very often in cases like that? Sometimes when somebody's just yelling, just out of control, angry, and they're yelling and yelling and yelling, what do some people try to do? Hey, hold on, hold on. They just get louder. They get louder. And they try to speak over that yelling person. They try to bring that person down by overpowering them. What happens with that? Well, it just becomes a yelling match. And one is trying to outdo the other. That is truly the case of the blind leading the blind, or maybe the deaf leading the deaf. But either way, they're both falling in the ditch, right? It's not going to work. If we just try to outdo somebody who is angry by overpowering them with our own voices, all we're going to do is fail. We need to be soft-spoken. We need to speak gently and softly to the person who is angry. You know, the proverb writer tells us that in Proverbs 15 and verse number 1. He said this. He said, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stir up anger." We need to speak softly. You know, some people would even say that if a person is angry and they're yelling at you, one of the best things that you can do is actually whisper. You know, I've heard that as a solution for people who are yelling and are angry. If you whisper back at them, what does it do to them? Well, again, I admit sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it might make them more angry. But in some situations, it causes them to have to calm themselves. Because if you're whispering, they have to quiet themselves to be able to hear you. And yes, it may not work in every situation, but it certainly worked here in 2 Kings chapter 5, and it is part of the godly wisdom of the Proverbs there in Proverbs 15:1. So when somebody's angry around us, let us speak softly, be calm, and don't stir up their anger with harsh words. That's number one. Number two, second thing that we see here with these servants is not only how to speak with our volume, but also with our tone. We need to remember that when we get into a situation where somebody is yelling, somebody is very angry, we need to remember that while they may not be acting in a way that is very respectable at that time, especially when it comes to our brothers and sisters in Christ, even though they may not be acting in a way that is respectable, he or she still is respectable because he or she is still a child of God. And so should we speak to that person in a respectful way. Notice how Naaman's servants are extremely respectful when they address him. They said to him again, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? They are extremely respectful to him. They were not demeaning. They weren't degrading. They weren't accusatory towards him. In other words, they did not assign some sort of value to Naaman because of his actions. You know, they could have been tempted to say, you know what, Naaman, you're just a whiny baby. You're just a whiny baby. If he would have told you to do something different, you would have done it. But because you didn't get your way, you're just a self-centered spoilsport, and you're going to go and not be healed. It's your fault, you big whiny baby. They could have said that. But I don't think it would have gone well. Because now, because they did not say what they may have felt like saying, but they were respectful to him and not accusatory, it calmed this man's anger and he did the right thing. Again, going back to the book of Proverbs in chapter number 15, this time verse number 4, the proverb writer very wisely tells us, a gentle tongue is a tree of life. But perverseness in it breaks the spirit. You know, have you ever had a child draw you a picture? I'm sure most all of us have, right? You've had a child draw you a picture. I love it when my boys draw us pictures. But have you ever had a child draw you a picture and you look at it and say, I don't know what that is? It happens time to time, doesn't it? So what do? If the child draws you a picture and you don't know what it is, what do? You say, well, you tell me about your picture that you drew. And of course, what do? They proceed to tell you this long, drawn-out story with very elaborate details about what this picture is, about that it's a spaceship or it's a battleship or it's a tank or it's a car or it's a train, whatever it is. And there's some long story about you, mom and dad, and all the other dwarfs and things are in this thing, and they are on this great journey, and it's very elaborate, and you say, I don't see that at all. I see a plate of spaghetti. But what do you say to the child? What do you say to the child when they bring you this picture that they are so proud of, and they give you this explanation of, and you just can't see? Do you look at them and say, well, Johnny, I just don't see that at all. I mean, I think you need to go and try again, because that's a pretty terrible drawing. If they were to put this in an art museum, the only place they would put it would be in the trash or on a stall in the bathroom to cover up graffiti, because this needs to get out of my sight. It's going to make me physically ill if I ever see it again. Would you say that to a child? Absolutely not. What do you tell them? You say, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of what you've done, and you've done a good job. Well, wait a minute. But Scott, you just said that the drawing was unintelligible. Aren't you lying to them? No, you're not. Here's why. First, because that is your child. You are proud of them. But second, while it may not be good for a Picasso or a Monet, it's fantastic for a child. We're comparing them to what they're capable of, not what others are capable of. So it is a good drawing, and you are proud of what they've done. But maybe also along with that, you don't tell them it's terrible. You don't tell them anything of that nature at all. Because if you were to tell them that, not only would it be untruthful, but would also break their spirits. While on one hand, a broken spirit can mean a humility or a proper sense of self, the other context, like here in Proverbs 15, verse number 4, a broken spirit means a loathing or a self-worthlessness, feeling like you are not worth anything because someone has made you feel small. Harsh and perverse words can do that to a person. Words can break a spirit. And if we speak harshly to a person who is already angry, if we're accusatory, and if we assign value to that person based on their bad attitude or their bad behavior, whereas before, if we were calm, we could have stopped that bad situation. Now, not only will they be angry about the original situation, but now they're going to be angry at themselves because you have just told them how bad they are for having been angry in the first place. And we would do well to remember this verse back here in 2 Kings chapter 5 when we're working with somebody like Naaman. Fighting fire with fire is always going to be a losing battle. Again, Naaman's servants, you know, they could have been accusatory. They could have told him how terrible he was for not listening to Elisha, but it would have only further fanned the flame of an angry man. Not only would he have been angry for not having the healing he desired, but he would have become more angry because he would have began to think that because of his behavior, he now was undeserving of such healing. And yes, sometimes people do things around us that are not respectful. They act in ways that are not respectful. And nothing that we should do should condone that bad behavior. But also nothing we should do should inflame that behavior as well. So my encouragement to you this morning is this. We need to be like these servants of Naaman. We need to speak quietly, because a soft answer turns away wrath. We need to speak gently. Don't accuse, don't insult, and don't break the spirit, but gently tell the truth, provide a path to change, but then support the person in that path. Now, I know that sometimes we feel like that we're not strong enough to overcome our problems. And, you know, anger, I've admitted very readily that that is one of the things that I suffer with, that I struggle with in my life. Sometimes we feel like that we're not strong enough to overcome those problems. We think that there's just no way that we can overcome them. But I encourage you to realize this. If you think that you are not strong enough to overcome anger, if you're not strong enough to overcome any other issue that you're dealing with, you may pray for strength, but I want you to realize God's already given it to you. Philippians 4 and verse number 13 says that we can do all things through Christ who gives us strength. It's there waiting for you. You may say, well, you know, yes, I understand that God has given us the strength. What I need is the will, the desire to use that strength. Well, if you didn't desire to use it, you wouldn't have prayed for it. It is there for you. You desire to use it. Then you may say, well, I guess I may desire to use that strength, but I just don't know how. I don't have the knowledge. I don't have the wisdom to make the right decisions on how to use the strength that God has given me. Well, yes, you do have the knowledge. You have the wisdom. You're holding it in your hands, because the Bible is able to furnish us completely into every good work, 2 Timothy 3:17. So really, when it comes down to it, all you really need to do now is to choose to get rid of anger, to choose to get rid of whatever problem it is that plagues you in this life. And also choose to let us help you. And if we can help you in that way or any other way spiritual, we'll be glad to do that this morning. If you're not a Christian, you'd like to become one, being baptized into Christ, you can do that this morning as well. Let us know what we need to do for you as we stand and as we sing.